Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. In March 2020, Jimmy Hills poured a cup of coffee, sat down with his iPad, and started talking. 4 years later, Java with Jimmy is a force to be reckoned with. The state's power players regularly appear on his show. Now, Hill says he's not a journalist, just someone who wants to support his city. And while he's done that, the lines between who he wants to be and who others expect him to be on the show can create tension. We sat down with James Hills the week Java with Jimmy turned four, and of course, we had coffee.
It's a... always interesting being on the other side of the desk. Even right now, my stomach is going boo, boo, boo.
Is it freaking you out a little bit?
Yeah. It's different. It's very different.
It is. Okay, yeah. So we've got our coffee here. Cheers.
We have our Java.
We're both drinking our Java.
Cheers to you. Absolutely.
That's right. So afternoon coffee, not a problem for you. Morning coffee. How many cups a day?
I'm doing well. Mm-hmm. I'm literally at most two cups. And that's usually, since I've hit 50, I'm up 3:30 in the morning now.
Oh, sir.
And so I'll have one early, and then, you know, I have to have one while I'm on the show.
Right.
So at most two, but we used to do a segment called Midday Java. Mm-hmm. So this is most apropos.
Okay.
And it tastes good. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay. And so just double checking, not one of those where you sort of hold the cup up to your mouth, but you're not really drinking it. You do. Really,
oh, no,
drink
I'm
your cups of coffee.
I'm really drinking coffee. It's definitely real coffee.
Awesome.
Definitely.
Awesome. So rather than me telling the story, you tell the story. How does Java with Jimmy start?
March 23rd, Governor Baker said we needed to stay home.
2020,
absolutely. 4 years ago. I've had a social media following. And so a few days before that, started on the iPhone. And on March 24th, literally got my coffee off of Keurig and just knew. I saw the debate about closing the liquor stores, and but you didn't leave this open. And I just had a pure view into what we saw exacerbated in Black and brown communities. And I found myself just wanting our community to be ready, warning our community about what was coming. And had about 50 people, the way I describe it, they came in the room and they stayed there.
The virtual Facebook room
would evolve into the Java Cafe. I was used to getting some numbers, but like 50, a solid 50 people were, you know, would go to 60, 70, but they stayed in the room, as I call it. And so at the end, my mother says, will this be an everyday coffee hour? I did it a couple of days, tried to go over to Instagram and do some things. And at that time, you know, I said, sure, we thought it would be a couple of weeks, a couple of months. And we've been going for 4 years and it's evolved. It's changed a lot. I looked at the first video versus, you know, the iteration of the green screen. And it's been an interesting journey, but it started in trying to warn our community around COVID.
What were you trying to warn your community about?
What we know about as far as health disparities, we didn't know what this virus was. And, you know, I'm sure you can agree and have heard the notion before, when America gets a cold, the Black and brown community gets the flu. And there was a lot of misinformation out there. And so I wanted to warn us to get ready. I'm aware of things, dynamics that come up with domestic violence. I'm aware of dynamics around child abuse. I'm aware of dynamics with substance use. And that lockdown, just for me, set off a bunch of red flags around what individuals and families and communities were going to deal with. I think there was so much ambiguity around the virus, but I just knew that it wasn't going to turn out well for us as a community. And so it was warning, it was bracing. I've never watched the whole full episode.
Mm-hmm.
And so I probably need to.
Makes me think of the famous Irish author James Joyce had this belief that these moments, the really big moments in our lives, we miss.
Yeah.
The moments of that should be of real epiphany aren't the ones that we know are the really big moments.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you didn't really know in that moment that you were launching something that was going to not only transform you, but transform conversations that those 50 people and more had access to.
Yep.
Who was paying attention to the community that was showing up to listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
That nexus is really interesting to me.
someone would say either James was going to be a pastor or politician or nonprofit leader. And it wasn't a desired thing. I keep saying I embrace what the platform is doing, but I think around anniversary time, I become hypersensitive around impact. And I realize that I'm about 98% where I've embraced what it is doing. When you have these moments of people stopping you and naming impact, and you know, I often say people getting mammograms and folks got the vaccination and folks are in health.
You went and got vaccinated and let people see you do that.
I did. I was chatting just casually with Mayor Wu, and we were texting. She was like, "I'm getting the vaccination tomorrow," and I jokingly said, "Do you want me to come with you?" She was like, "Come on." And so I did get, I believe that was the second vaccination at that time, and I realized that as the platform was growing, this nexus piece and epiphany of, you know, what destiny is, I realized, you know, the impact of my voice. And at that time, we needed to see more Black and brown people getting the vaccination. And I did a commercial with the first one, but just doing that with the mayor at the different variants, the virus coming up, it was important to do it again.
I want listeners to get a little feel for this now. This is actually you and Mayor Wu on Java with Jimmy. This is November 16th, 2022. Live at Madison Park. This was first live taping with an audience.
And I just want to say I am excited to be back at my alma mater, Madison Park. Somebody turn to your neighbor and say, "Good things come out of Madison Park." We want to introduce our guest today, Mayor Michelle Wu. Mayor, it's been a year as of today. You were inaugurated a year ago. How are you feeling?
Kind of comparing it to what I was feeling a year ago, which was pretty nervous. A year later, I'm really excited. I'm inspired by everything that I've gotten to see and experience.
So I'm really struck by that. For you're cracking up about it. What makes you laugh now?
Because I wish you all could see me. I know I'm beat red because my face is
you
hot.
You are.
I don't watch episodes. I watch pieces when I know that we've made a real mental health. Someone share their story. I'll go back and watch segments, but I don't listen to myself often.
It's hard.
And so it's just interesting because you don't remember things until you hear them again. And so I actually sort of forgot about that. We did her 1 year anniversary of being inaugurated as mayor at my alma mater at Madison Park High School. So it was definitely awesome.
So part of what made me want to pick that one, and we've got some other sound we'll play later, is this. You said, you know, people said you'd be either a pastor or a politician or a nonprofit leader. And I'm really glad you said that, because in looking at this over the last 4 years, listening to some of the sound, looking at some of your guests, you know, everyone from Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley to Governor Maura Healey in her first month, you hit some of all of it. Right. Early on, of course, there was a pastoral dimension. People, 50, 60 people coming, just wanting a sense of community, wanting to be connected. You were a focal point where people could come together, share, listen to the warnings, be in the same virtual space together. The politician piece, you know, having public leaders, mm-hmm. having conversations with them. Nonprofit leader, over time you did move from the iPad to the second bedroom in your apartment because you got funding to get the green screen and get the computers. You know, it has been all of those mm-hmm. things. And not everybody is willing to walk the accidental path they stumble on.
Mm.
At any point, has this been scary?
Often.
Why?
It's scary in the point of there's a lot of ambiguity in not knowing what's next. It's scary, and I'll be very honest with you, it's scary in a large percentage of being considered a credible voice of the community, and that responsibility of being, you know, accurate and as much as possible trying to be balanced. You know, here of late, I've really had to take a look at that. It's scary, to be honest with you, because I really don't want to be a journalist.
Yeah.
I don't want to be held to a lot of the responsibility that journalists have. I am a commentator who happened to be from community, spent some time working in medicine, and also worked for Boston's longest serving mayor, worked for the Bush administration, and an advisor to DeVal Patrick. Working in the hospital made me apt to ask layman entry-level questions around COVID. Oversaw the pulmonary and critical care fellowship at Brigham and Women's Hospital. They oversee the ICU,
right,
where most of the COVID patients were going. Again, Mayor Menino, Governor Patrick, and George W. Bush, African American Healthy Marriage Initiative, Runaway and Homeless Youth, oversaw $2.2 million in grants across New England. That gave me, and Mayor Menino and Mike Knievy and them gave me that chutzpah, for lack of better words, into the political realm here in Boston. And, you know, most of all, being from the community, being a Black man raised in Boston gave me that community perspective.
But, you lay all of that out, right?
Mm-hmm.
How were you not going to wind up at some point in your life able to synthesize a complicated situation and bring it to people who would trust you because you came from the same place?
You got me. You're good. It's different being on this side of the
it's
desk.
It's harder on that side.
I don't
side
know.
In some ways.
I don't know. 2 years in, I realized that synergy, that intersectionality of all of those things came together to make me apt to, you know, have this platform evolve into a space where we share information and resources with the most marginalized communities for the purpose of mobilizing them toward action, toward equitable quality of life. That's my mission. I'm appreciative for every experience. I have to name that with that experience, a lot of my impact now comes from lessons learned, to be honest with you, falling on my face, being rude to people, you know, going live previously to Java with Jimmy and saying things that may not be appropriate for public radio, passionate, and sometimes, quote unquote, right, but presentation is everything. And my grandmother taught me that you get more bees with honey than you do vinegar.
I'm going to play a little bit of sound here. This is Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley on Java with Jimmy. This is not that, well, I guess it's almost a year ago now, June of 2023.
I have to check in on you with all due is Ayanna, the mother, the wife, the advocate, yes, but how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know, I just really aim to center gratitude in all things. People are carrying holes that are just too big to fill. And as I've said many times before, whenever you meet someone, everyone is walking around with these sort of tiny fractures. And your engagement, you get to decide if you want that to be an engagement that contributes to those fractures resulting in hard breaks,
yeah,
or that puts them on a pathway to healing.
So I'm both struck by what she said,
yeah,
which is an incredibly human thing to say, but also the fact that she said it on air to you. You know, you talked about you didn't really want to be a journalist. You've mm-hmm been all these other things. And I do wonder if the fact that it is a community space that you've created leaves room for people to be able to talk like that versus a journalism space, an on-the-record space, you know, is it different?
I mentioned a few minutes ago that I used to be a little hothead. My activism came out very passionately and sometimes offended people. I've been able to repair some bridges. I was tired.
When were you tired?
Right before Java with Jimmy, in the period of being out there advocating toward violence and calling people out. The
after
city's
you
not
lost
doing
your
enough.
Nephew?
After I lost my
in
nephew.
2017.
That was, We Need to Know came out of that. And that was the thing.
Movement that you started.
That was a movement, and that was a time where I embraced everything that came with the rudeness. I embraced what I was able to generate out of that passion place. I didn't care about a filter at that point because I spent so much time advocating for years in spaces for other families. And then to experience lies, to experience a lack of resources was like a smack in the face. With all due to other families that I fought for, you just presumed, right, wrong, indifferent, that because of those relationships and impact and knowing the work, that folks would be like, wow, this is quote unquote Jimmy's nephew. Inequitable as all get out. But in that moment, the humanity of me was just like, really? And so
just pause for
yes
listeners. You felt that you did not get transparent communication from the city and law enforcement. You felt you didn't get care and consideration. You felt you had an experience, as I understand it, very much like the people you'd been supporting.
So hearing about it and getting the texts and the emails is one thing. But to live it, and then I was in Washington at the time. And so I'm navigating over the phone and wasn't here. I know that the Java Cafe has journalisticness, journalistic adjacent, because of the mayor coming in monthly, Congresswoman Presley, Governor Healey in her first appearance after being inaugurated. I embrace that. But at the root of that, there is a relationship, and then there's the resource, because sometimes when they're in other spaces with folks that carry the title of journalists, sometimes they may be on guard. And with all due respect to them, I don't want to make any indictments on their transparency. I'll just say that I've been able, with the Java family, to create a hospitable environment, but is hospitable and lovable. But when need to, we're accountable in love. And sometimes we have to practice tough love. And I also, I'm 52 years old. I've mentioned my experience. I have knowledge, skills, and experience that allow me to sometimes now sit back and look at things through different lenses from my experience. And so I mentioned before, one of the things that scares me, it doesn't scare me, but it concerns me, is perception that because of these relationships or because of my growth and development, I'm not at the mayor and I'm not at this person, quote unquote, at, you know, yes. Calling them out. Oh, but there is call in. It's just because of relationship, I can do that privately. And so all of that to say that I know that her coming on and others sometimes gives the perception of being a journalist. But as you said, as a community space, what they fight for and their impact is, as Ayanna Pressley says, those that have been closest to the pain should be closest to the power. And in this space of Black media and community voices growing in Boston, a lot of those that are running those and a lot of the majority of the audience that tune in is that population to which the Congresswoman refers.
All right. So now address the hanging question.
Yes.
And I know you know what it is.
What
I
is
know.
It?
So this is the question about the new podcast.
Oh, God.
Right. So address this.
I'm so glad that I finally get a chance to thank you.
Yeah. So let me explain for listeners and then you can address it. Okay. So Flexibility and Benefits for Massachusetts Drivers has a new podcast that you will be, is helming the fair word? You'll be
hosting? I'm the host.
Yeah.
Yes.
They are a group backed by tech companies, including Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, pushing a ballot campaign to classify rideshare drivers as independent contractors. Address that. I mean, that's not what a journalist
does. How much time
does.
You got? Can you give me so I know what to squeeze in? How many minutes do I have?
You got 2 minutes.
I got 2 minutes. Okay, so very quickly, in 2021, I was approached about the original ballot question. At that time, it was either going to go through legislation. If you remember, Maura Healey, who's now the governor, had put some, I believe, and that's still active, there. She had filed a complaint or did a case. However, at that time, there was going to be legislation or a ballot question. Somehow the ballot question got off. I got approached to do a podcast. And at that time, I was like, I'm not sure where this is going. Like, what's up with the unions? However, my partner at the time was driving. And I said to him, I said, listen, I have this before me. There's some issues for me. You as a driver, what do you want? Well, how do you feel about it? And we had a long discussion about it. For me, it was personal at that point where I made the decision. I kind of reached back out to the folk and said, yes, I'm willing to do it. I got approached most recently and I said, not this time. I'll be honest and transparent. The brand is out here. I was a little cautious. However, whether they stay independent or become employees, there is a movement to get them unionized. So what I'm saying is that it's a value thing for me based on originally where my partner said they wanted to stay independent. And then also I support, which is potentially the other ballot question, that whether they become an employee or stay independent, I was going to say it another way, let them unionize, because there are still things that need to happen to ensure that drivers have the rights and the benefits that they need. And so thank you for asking me that, because, you know, I also know of my influence in spaces, and when community voices are rising, black and brown voices are rising, marginalized voices are rising, sometimes that is not always appreciated by dominant long-time powers that have been. And so I'm going to be honest with you and say also there was a little extra energy there in some of this pushback. And I'll leave that there with all due respect to you as a host.
That's fine. Last question for you.
Yes.
What's the dream you haven't done yet?
There was a period that I didn't dream. I had the inability to prioritize myself in this sort of thing of not addressing what I needed to address to heal by staying busy and supporting others. And so right now the dream is to be healthy. Mental health is a part of overall health. The dream is to continue to be a voice for my community. The dream is to continue to be a choir director in the sense that I want the platform to allow other me's to be able to get their voice out there. I've learned a lot by mistakes, by falling on my face and being dead out wrong in some things. I've applied those mistakes, lessons learned from them, and want to help others. The other dream is, too, that we see equity in our lifetime, that we see some iteration of reparations, that we see the ability back into law that you and your demographic and women have the ability to make decisions about their bodies. Equity, where people are living where they're not harming themselves and they're not harming everyone else, and everybody gets an equitable piece of the pie.
That was James Jimmy Hills, host of the streaming show Java with Jimmy. He joined us the week the show turned 4. There's more ahead. Stay with us. I'm Tiziana Deering. You're listening to Radio Boston.